Greetings, everyone, and welcome to today's program. The situation in Iraq grows grimmer and grimmer with each passing day. Bombs, bullets, hangings, and decapitations are leaving a wake of fear, agony, pain, and suffering as the nation appears to be on the brink of civil war. On Tuesday, March the 14th, Iraqi police found in and near and around Baghdad over 70 bodies shot or strangled to death, and 15 men were found in the back of a pickup truck who appeared to have been hanged. The killings appeared to be linked to the ongoing struggle between the majority Shiites and the historically dominant Sunnis. Remember, the Sunnis were the ones of the Ba'ath Party who supported the regime of Saddam Hussein. U.S. officials are quick to say that the violence and bloodshed is not a civil war, as they go on to define a civil war in technical terms. A civil war is a war in which parties within the same country or empire struggle for national control of state power. As in any war, the conflict may be over other matters such as religion, ethnicity, or distribution of wealth. Some civil wars are also categorized as revolutions when major societal restructuring is a possible outcome of the conflict. An insurgency, whether successful or not, is likely to be classified as a civil war by some historians if and only if organized armies fight conventional battles. So one might argue, in the technical sense, the insurgency in Iraq is not a civil war. However, two parties here, the Shias and the Sunnis within Iraq, are struggling for national control of state power, and at the same time, a third party is anxiously looking on, at times getting into the foray, the Kurds. They are also involved and anxiously anticipating the outcome. Furthermore, the insurgency is being fueled by Iran, who has visions of linking Iraq and Iran together and forming a great and grand Shiite republic, one step at a time, of course. President Bush directly linked Iran to the death of American troops in Iraq recently, saying roadside bomb components have been tracked to Tehran. He went on to say that coalition forces have seized IEDs, that is, improvised explosive devices and components that were clearly produced in Iran. Such actions, along with Iran's support for terrorism and its pursuit of nuclear weapons, are increasingly isolating Iran, said President Bush. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld on Tuesday accused Iran of dispatching elements of its Revolutionary Guard to stir up trouble inside Iraq. Secretary Rumsfeld went on to say that the infiltrators were members of the Al-Quds division of Iran's Revolutionary Guards, the network of soldiers and vigilantes whose mandate is to defeat threats to the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Interestingly, Al-Quds is the Islamic name for Jerusalem. Of course, you know, literally, Jerusalem means city of peace or holy city. The Al-Quds division is responsible for operations outside Iranian territory. Intelligence sources believe that Iran's Al-Quds division has infiltrated Iraq's Badr Brigade, now called the Badr Organization. Both Iran's Al-Quds force and Iraq's Badr Brigade were founded in Iran in the 1980s with the same goal, that is, to establish Shiite Islamic republics throughout the Middle East. The Badr Brigade was founded by Ayatollah al-Hakim as a resistance force against Saddam Hussein's regime. The brigade was based in Iran for 2 decades during the rule of Saddam Hussein, occasionally trying to make attacks inside Iraq for the purpose of trying to overthrow Saddam Hussein's regime, but in each case they were soundly defeated. It consists of several thousand Iraqi exiles, refugees, and defectors who fought alongside Iran in the Iran-Iraqi War. Returning to Iraq following the 2003 coalition's invasion of Iraq, the group changed its name from the Badr Brigade to the Badr Organization. The Badr Organization was initially viewed as a friend of the U.S. since it opposed Saddam Hussein. However, that view may be changing in light of recent comments by Secretary Rumsfeld in which he stated that the Iranian Al-Quds division is among the infiltrators that are fomenting violence between the Shiites and Sunnis in Iraq. One of the more frightful dimensions of this scenario is that Ahmadinejad, the current president of Iran, played a prominent leadership role in the founding and training of both Al-Quds and the Badr Brigade. Ahmadinejad is committed to building a vast Shiite republic that would include Iraq and eventually the whole world of Islam. It seems that the Iraqi Shiites are willing to be friendly to the United States as long as the U.S. is helping them crush their religious and political opponents, the Sunnis. If Ahmadinejad's plans are realized, the end result will be the creation of the second Shiite Islamic Republic in the world, thus creating a powerful economic, military, and strategic alliance between Iran and Iraq that is extremely hostile to the United States. According to Weiss Research Incorporated, based on official estimates, an Iran-Iraq alliance would control 248 billion barrels of oil. That's more than the oil reserves of Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates combined. And it's nearly as much as the oil reserves of Saudi Arabia, officially estimated at 263 billion barrels. The end result will be the second Shiite Islamic Republic in the world and a powerful economic, military, and strategic alliance between Iran and Iraq that is extremely hostile to the United States. There is no question that Iran plans on being a major player on the world's geopolitical scene in the near future. In an article titled, "It's Later Than We Think," Arnaud D. Borchgrave, editor-at-large for the Washington Times and for the United Press International, describes the sobering situation that the West faces in dealing with Iraq. He highlights the fact that the principal motivation behind many of the actions of the current regime are not based on geopolitical or economic causes or reasons, but rather on religious or spiritual causes. Ahmadinejad states, quote, "The ultimate promise of all divine religions will be fulfilled with the emergence of a perfect human being, the 12th Iman, who is heir to all prophets. He will lead the world to justice and absolute peace. O mighty Lord, I pray to you, hasten the emergence of your last repository, the Promised One," end of quote. Iran's dominant Twelver sect holds that this will be Muhammad ibn Hassan, the righteous descendant of the Prophet Muhammad. The Mahdi is said to have gone into occlusion in the 9th century at age 5. His return, they say, will be preceded by cosmic chaos, war, bloodshed, and pestilence, somewhat similar to the scene you read about in the Holy Word of God in the Book of Revelation. So there are counterfeits, of course, to the real apocalypse or unveiling of what is going to take place at the end of this age. They go on to say that after this cataclysmic confrontation between the forces of good and evil, the Mahdi will lead the world to an era of universal peace. So in a sense, they are mimicking what Jesus Christ, the Messiah, is going to do when he comes again with the holy saints and brings peace to this world. Ahmadinejad's brand of Shiite faith believes that he can not only influence but hasten the awaited return of the 12th Iman, known as the Mahdi. Ahmadinejad is close to the Messianic Hojatiyah Society, which is governed by the conviction the 12th Iman's return will be hastened by the creation of chaos on the earth. Thus, he seems anxious to be at the center of chaos and confusion, apparently thinking it will pave the way for the return of the Mahdi. Ahmadinejad's ideological mentor and spiritual guide is Ayatollah Mishbah Yazdi, who heads the ultra-conservative acolytes who believe the 12th Iman's return is imminent. Sodi Borchgrave writes that Ahmadinejad would probably welcome a war with the U.S. and Israel. Iran is the modern world's first and only Shiite Islamic Republic. But regardless of any elections, the supreme leader remains, as before, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Hosseini Khamenei, the same cleric who succeeded Ayatollah Khomeini nearly 17 years ago on June the 4th, 1989. And even when elections are held, the Iranian people have overwhelmingly voted for the most radical supporter of the Ayatollahs since the Iranian Revolution, squarely defeating any candidates that have tried in vain to nudge Iran back to some modicum of secular reforms. Most Westerners are probably not aware of the fact that when all is said and done, the president of Iran and his ministers do not make the ultimate decisions that will determine the course of world history in the months that lie ahead. They bow to the dictates of Ayatollah Khomeini, who in turn bows only to his personal interpretation of the Quran. This is the man who will decide almost single-handedly how Iran retaliates against UN sanctions, if and when UN sanctions come, how Iran escalates the crisis, and how the next phase of this new, ever-hotter Cold War will be waged. Western leaders have often talked about and hoped for a regime change from within Iran. But are they dreaming? When we come back for the next segment of our program, we will continue to pursue spiritual battles in high places. Really, this is what it's all about. Spiritual battles are being waged in high places, and the Western leaders do not really recognize or understand the conviction that the people hold who are trying to do what they're trying to do in establishing Shiite republics throughout the Middle East. We are indeed living in perilous times, and every day we see more and more the world scene shift toward chaos, confusion, misery, agony, suffering, and pain all over the face of the earth. We see children starving in various parts of the world. Bird flu is raging in some areas. New cases of mad cow disease. One new case now just in this past week in the state of Alabama. Yeah, almost any kind of political, social, or other situation you want to name, geopolitical, it's here with us. War, rumors of war, terrorism, and all the kinds of things that strike fear and terror in the hearts of men, these things are prevalent today on the world scene. You need to understand the times in which we're living. We have a booklet titled, Are We Living in the Last Days? We will send you this booklet free of charge. All you have to do is call our toll-free number. At the same time, we will also give you a free subscription to our bi-monthly publication, The Good News Magazine, a magazine of understanding that will help you understand what is going on in the world today and help you deal with the many situations you face in every aspect of life, having to do with marriage and family, child rearing, some of the great social issues of the day, as well as how you can be prepared spiritually for that which lies ahead. So in order to receive the article, Are We Living in the Last Days? Actually, it's a booklet, Are We Living in the Last Days? And a subscription to the Good News Magazine, all you have to do is call our toll-free number. That toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614. Once again, that toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614. And now back to world news and prophecy. As we mentioned in the first section of our program, that Western leaders have hoped for and talked about a regime change from within in Iran. However, in view of the religious and spiritual dimensions that we discussed in the first segment of our program, those spiritual dimensions that are present in Iran, there is little hope for a regime change coming from within. It seems that the peoples of the Western world cannot grasp the fact that powerful spiritual forces are at work behind the scenes and that the ultimate battle is spiritual. The prophet Daniel describes a battle between the angelic forces and the prince of Persia, who is really a powerful demon. Daniel had received a vision and had been fasting and praying for 21 days, seeking the meaning of the vision, when a spirit being came to him. The spirit being says to him in Daniel chapter 10, verses 11 and 12, that from the time that Daniel had set his heart to really understand the words, and remember, Daniel had been praying and fasting for 21 days, that he had been trying to get to Daniel. But in Daniel 10:13, this spirit being says, "But the prince of the kingdom of Persia," Persia is modern-day Iran, "the prince of the kingdom of Persia, a powerful demon, withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia." Then he continues in Daniel chapter 10, verse 14, "Now I am come to make you understand what shall befall your people in the latter days, for yet the vision is for many days." And then in Daniel 10:19, he says, "O man greatly beloved, fear not, peace be unto you. Be strong, yes, be strong." And this is the time to be strong. And the only way you can really be strong is to put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the battles and the wiles of the devil. "And when he had spoken unto me, I was strengthened, and said, Let my Lord speak, for you have strengthened me. Then said he, Do you know wherefore I come from you? And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia." There was more battle to be done with this powerful demonic force. "And when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come." So there is some organization in Satan's kingdom, that unseen world where spiritual battles are fought. And Daniel talks about it right here. It's revealed to him. Then this being goes on to say, "But I will show you that which is noted in the scripture of truth, and there is none that holds me in these things but Michael, your prince." So Daniel's account of this encounter between the holy angels and the prince of Persia bears testimony to the fact that great battles are being fought behind the scenes. But you might ask, why are the forces of evil and the forces of Satan, the devil, fighting against the angels of God? The battle is over. Who is going to control the peoples of the world? And who will be the object of worship? Satan, the devil, is on an insatiable quest to break prophecy, overthrow the throne of God, and become the object of worship. The Apostle Paul warns us about the spiritual powers and how that really the battle is going on against wicked spirits. In Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 10, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord in the power of His might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." Satan has worked through several kingdoms and kings through the ages in his efforts to break prophecy and become the object of worship. But it seems that modern man, so-called modern man, does not really understand this, and they reject the plain revelation that is contained in the Word of God. The Medo-Persian Empire, the territory of modern Iran, defeated the Babylonian Empire around 539 B.C., and was the dominant world power until its defeat by Alexander the Great around 333 B.C. The prophet Daniel was given a vision in Daniel 8 of a ram with two horns pushing against a goat with a notable horn. Daniel sought the meaning of this vision. Finally, in Daniel chapter 8 and verse 17, an angel comes and gives him the meaning of the vision. The angel tells him that the vision is for the end time, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. And in Daniel 8 and verse 18, "Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, Behold, I will make you to know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. The ram which you saw, having two horns, are the kings of Media and Persia. And the rough goat is the king of Grecia, and the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king." So here we see this battle that is being fought between these two kingdoms, Medo-Persia and Grecia, or Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great was the one who triumphed in this battle. Alexander the Great and his forces defeated the Medo-Persian Empire. But Alexander died unexpectedly at the age of 33, and there was no heir to succeed him. We see here in the Bible, if you had no other proof of the validity of the Bible, you could look here in Daniel 8, and you can see that the historical record was written in advance. Daniel describes the division of Alexander's empire after the death of Alexander, since there was no heir to succeed him. This is Daniel 8:22. Now that being broken, that is his empire, whereas four stood up for it. Four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. And once again, not in his power has to do with the fact that they are really energized by Satan the devil. He's working behind the scenes. So Alexander's empire was divided into four divisions under the rule of four of his leading generals. Ptolemy ruled some parts of Asia Minor and Egypt and Palestine. It was called the Ptolemaic Empire. It became the king of the south in Bible prophecy. Cassander ruled Macedonia and Greece. Lysimachus was given provinces in Asia Minor. And Seleucid ruled Syria, Armenia, and territory east of the Euphrates, including Media and Persia. The Seleucid Empire became known as the King of the North. The Medes and the Persians have continued to occupy the same territory to this very day. And according to Bible prophecy, the Medes will be instrumental in the destruction of Babylon at the end of the age. The prophets Isaiah and Jeremiah wrote of the role of the Medes in the destruction of Babylon. First of all, let's note Isaiah's description of the destruction of Babylon at the hands of the Medes. As we have already noted, the Medo-Persian Empire did conquer ancient Babylon, and thus some might say that Isaiah's prophecy has already been fulfilled. But let's note the time setting for Isaiah's prophecy. This is in Isaiah 13, verse 6. Howl you, for the day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. So the time setting is the day of the Lord, when Jesus Christ supernaturally intervenes in the affairs of humankind. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrow shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travails. They shall be amazed one at another, and their faces shall be as flames. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners out of it. God is not going to turn a deaf ear all through forever concerning what is going on here on the earth. He is going to hear the cries of those who sigh and cry for the abominations that are taking place. Are you sighing and crying for the abominations that are taking place? Or are you having pleasure in unrighteousness, as so many are today? And some think that God has gone away and he's never going to intervene, that he's altogether like just another human being, that the Bible really isn't true. But this says that he's going to come and destroy the sinners out of the land. For the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light, the sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. We note that the time setting is the day of the Lord, and the description of the events taking place in this time period parallel the description given of the day of the Lord by the Apostle John in the book of Revelation. In chapter 6, and verse 12, "And behold, when he had opened the sixth seal, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth of hair, and the moon became as blood." Very similar to what Isaiah said, where Isaiah said, The stars of heaven are going to be shaken, not give their light. The sun shall be darkened in its going forth. The moon shall not cause her light to shine. So there can be no doubt that the time setting of Isaiah 13 is the day of the Lord. Isaiah goes on to say in Isaiah 13, verse 17, "Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver. And as for gold, they shall not delight in it." This shows that those who are pursuing whatever they are pursuing, the Medes, that they are not that concerned about material things. It has to do with something else. And that something else that is being fomented at the present time there is of a religious, spiritual nature. Isaiah goes on to say in Isaiah 13:18, their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. In Isaiah 13:19, in Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. Jeremiah prophesies of a similar involvement of the Medes in the destruction of Babylon. He writes in Jeremiah 51:11, make bright the arrows, gather the shields. The Eternal raised up the spirit of the kings of the Medes, for his device is against Babylon to destroy it, because it is the vengeance of the Lord, the vengeance of his temple. And he goes on to say in Jeremiah 51:28, prepare against her the nations with the kings of the Medes, the captains thereof, and the rulers thereof, and all the land of his dominion. And the land shall tremble in sorrow, for every purpose of the Eternal shall be performed against Babylon, to make the land of Babylon a destruction without an inhabitant. So based on these prophecies, we see that the Iranian problem is not going to disappear anytime soon. In the meantime, we will hear of wars and rumors of war, kingdom against kingdom and nation against nation. Eventually, the tensions will become so great, and Satan will think that he has set the stage perfectly for him to show his intentions to become the object of worship. And sadly, all those whose names are not written in the Lamb's Book of Life, according to Revelation 13:8, will be deceived by him. We are indeed living in perilous times, as described by the Apostle Paul in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 5. Paul says that these people, in verse 5 of 2 Timothy 3, have a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, from such turn away. So these are people probably who are going to church, but they are not really being transformed into the image of Jesus Christ. Yes, we are living in perilous times. Men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those who are good. Now is the time to turn away from ungodliness and turn to God, lest you are deceived by the great deceiver who is waging war in high places. Now is the time to put on the whole armor of God so you might be able to stand in that evil day. You have been listening to World News and Prophecy. For the free literature offered on this program, Are We Living in the Last Days, and a subscription to the Good News Magazine, all you have to do is to call our toll-free number. That toll-free number is 1-888-886-5614. Once again, 1-888-886-5614. And be sure to be tuned to this station next week for World News and Prophecy.